Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Old Men and the Three ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. It's halftime and the scoreboard is not looking good, but that's when you say to yourself, it's time to get back in the game and take as much of my friend's money as I possibly can. That's right. The hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to be the biggest tycoon ever. It's classic Monopoly, but anytime with tons of twists. Play on countless Monopoly boards, charge your friends rent, or smash their landmarks with a wrecking ball. You can even team up with friends for extra rewards. So put on your game face and download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store or Google Play. If you're like me and appreciate great quality, easy-to-wear clothes in your closet, let me introduce you to Rails. They're a Los Angeles-based brand that blends their California roots with an elevated European aesthetic, and the fabrics feel as good as they look. From super luxe button-downs and essential outerwear to vacation-ready shorts and tees, Rails is consciously crafted for the modern man on the move. With the sun coming out, I recently got myself a few short-sleeve button-downs, and they are super light and comfortable. Try Rails for yourself at their flagship stores in New York, San Francisco, Boston, London, Paris, and beyond, or at rails.com. And take 15% off your order with the code JJ. That's 15% off with code JJ at RAILS.com.
Tommy, as always, this podcast is presented by Cash App. And when Luca signed his max extension over the offseason with the Mavericks, I tweeted out that he owed me $1,700 that he could Cash App me, which he, of course, never did, even though I sent him my Cash App handle.
You commented on it multiple times and he had not.
Yes, and he still hasn't to this day, despite the fact that us being in the same room earlier this week. But here's what I realized after we recorded this episode. I'm willing to forgive the debt because he came on our show. I think that's a fair compromise.
Yes, I think those debts are forgiven, but if he owes you more down the road, he's going to have to pay you on Cash App.
Yes, for sure. So again, Luca, your debts are forgiven. Thank you. Welcome to The Old Men of the Three with JJ Redick and Tommy Alter, presented by Cash App and brought to you by 342 Productions. This is episode 105. Luka Doncic and Alex Caruso. Tommy, a long time coming with Luka. First of all, Luka does not do long form style stuff. We are so grateful that he agreed to sit down with us while he was here in New York before he ripped apart the Nets last night. And I just want to clarify one thing. You know, normally you guys listen to the podcast, our interviews can extend sometimes, like with Draymond, over an hour and a half. Luka requested that we keep it to 30 minutes. I think we stuck in an extra five. So it's about a 35-minute interview. Yeah. We cover a ton of stuff, though. Still a lot left to be uncovered for the next time he's on. But I know we touched on his background in Slovenia, his time with Real Madrid, EuroLeague versus the NBA, hunting superstars in ISO. We even talked about the MVP, a bunch of stuff. And my big takeaway was the same takeaway I had as his teammate. There is an innocence to Luka, a humility, an honesty, and a real, real strong skill of sarcasm.
I was going to say, and a comic sensibility, which I think does not always come through necessarily by watching him play. But he's a funny dude.
Yeah, he's a great personality. Again, we're so grateful for him to sit down with us. And the Mavs are rolling right now. They won again last night. They're in a great position. Again, we get into the MVP talk, but you could certainly make a case, given his play over the last few months, that he should be right up there in the MVP conversation. We also are going to have our correspondent on, new correspondent, Alex Caruso of the Chicago Bulls. We'll touch on a bunch of stuff with him before we get to an Old Man in the Three draft. So, Tommy, unless you got something to add, let's get to Luka Doncic.
Luka, thank you so much for doing this, man.
You're welcome.
I didn't want to have to do this. I didn't want to have to air our shit out on the podcast. But you owe me $1,700. And
I really want to collect that. And I went through today. I went in my notes section on my phone, and I have my books from our Tonk and Blu-ray games, and it clearly says LD17 next to it.
Okay, what about the half-court shot, though?
What about the half-court
shot? You owe me like a grand from the half-court shot.
Luca, what was your first JJ impression when you first met him?
Oof. He was a vet when I met him. That was the first time meeting, right?
Yeah.
I remember a lot of, you know, before, you know, he was elite, he could run. But when he came to the Mavs, he couldn't run at all. But what I have to say, he could have missed a shot. So, no, I was just glad to meet him. You know, I remember those great years in Clippers, Orlando, your only dunk in Orlando. I remember that. But, yeah, it was nice. It was great meeting him.
I regret that you and I did not get to play together when I was physically fit. You know, I was hurt. I'd had PRP done right before I got to you guys, right before I got traded to you guys. And it never was right. And I regret, you know, being a shell of myself with Dallas.
Yeah, I know you were. I wish I would play with you too. It was automatic assist. So I regret that too.
You guys are on a bit of a run lately. Got off to a slow start this year. You're 26-8 in your last 34 games. You're now tied for fourth with the Jazz, record-wise, in the West. What do you think has been the sort of catalyst or the key to this turnaround you guys have had this year?
I would say like this, you know, obviously we had the whole new coaching staff. So I think you can't start from since the beginning, you know, you're just going to win games by game. You know, you got to build up. I think with Jay Kidd, you know, we built something here, and he's been trusting the, trust the process. I mean, that's Philly, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were just playing way better defense in the last couple of years, and that's really how we win the games, by defending people.
Yeah, you guys are up to sixth overall in defense.
Defensive player of the year right here.
Yeah, you should definitely get some votes for all defensive team.
Yeah, for sure. At least third.
At least third. You'll be in the running for third place, or third team all defense for sure. When the season started, and this is not a knock, Luka, so don't take this personally. I'm just saying the Twitterverse, the NBA Twitter world, a lot of the discourse around you was that you came into camp out of shape. There was the picture of you enjoying yourself after the Olympics, smoking hookah. and I think you even admitted that you came into the season out of shape. For some context, of course, you know, it was we played until June 7th of last year. You got ready for the Olympics. You played the Olympics. It was a short turnaround for you. Did you touch a ball between the Olympics and training camp? Did you do anything?
Yeah, I did. But mostly just basketball, you know, just shooting, not physical preparation. So that was my mistake there.
So here's a question I have for you, because I was around the team last year, and there are jokes about your physique, but I feel like you, and Pat Beverly sort of talked about this last week when he talks about guarding you, is that your body makeup is just different than a lot of guys. Do you feel like your size is really just, it's an advantage, especially as you sort of get into your dribble package?
Yeah, for sure. But the other thing, I think a lot of people don't know me. My legs are good. I have like good legs, not for jumping, obviously, but strong legs. Somebody calls them tree trunk legs. But I think that helps me a lot, and size-wise too, you know. And if the point guard is going to guard me, you know, I'm going to have advantage in the post.
Yeah.
Did you feel like when you got to the league there was any adjustment in terms of just figuring out what like 48 minutes in the NBA is versus playing overseas?
Yeah, for sure. But the other thing is, in Europe, you know, the timeout is 1 minute and you don't have as many timeouts. Here you have, if you have played TV game, you have like four minutes timeout. You can go get a beer and come back, you know, to play. But, you know, it's everything is just, the game is longer, but it's more intense too. So I think it's kind of both ways.
Let's go back to Europe. Let's go back to young Luka. Even prior to signing with Real Madrid, when you started playing basketball, What was it about the game? What was it about basketball that made you fall in love with it?
Well, my father played, so I was always in, like I was saying, like contact with basketball. You know, every time he had a game in the halftime or before the game, I was going to shoot. Even if I couldn't like hit the rim because I was like 3 years old, but I was always with the ball playing. And just, you know, since then, I always liked basketball. I was playing a lot of sports. I think that helped me a lot in basketball, but I was only good at basketball, so that's why I decided to play basketball.
When did you sort of develop the flair of your game? Was that after going to Real Madrid at 13, or was that even as a young player in Slovenia? In terms of the no-look passes, the behind the back, the step backs, did you have that flair and that shit to your game even back then?
I wouldn't say so, but you know, always I think the most underrated part about me is passing. You know, I really like passing. You know, the court vision is something, that's something I even had when I was little. You know, I saw what people are going to do, how they're going to guard me, and where the passes go. But I think just through the year, just playing basketball, you know, learning. I didn't really use the step back in Europe, but then I did it like against Houston in my first year, and they say, oh, you have a great step back. And since then, I've been doing the step back. I didn't really like
wait,
nobody.
You did it against Houston? Like you did it in the game? You hadn't practiced it really?
No, I never, like before, I never really practiced the step back. But since then, like I scored like three threes and a two against Houston, like at the end of the game. It was like three step backs. And then like everybody said, oh, you got the step back. And since then I've been practicing step backs, man. It's been working good.
Did you feel like your instinct, like because your just basketball instinct has been that way since you started playing? Or did you have like a period when you were younger where you felt like mentally like a switch flipped and you kind of figured it out?
No, I wouldn't say like switch. I would say like just like I said, through the years, you know, when I was in Madrid, I was always playing with the older guys, so I could learn a lot from them. Then with 16, I started to practice with the first team. And, you know, you just watch and then try to do it on the court and just learn from that.
What made you, at 13 years old, travel, move to a – sign with Real Madrid, travel and move to a different country, 1,000 miles away from where you grew up?
We use kilometers in Europe. No, I can't. It was a tough, very tough decision, man. It was, I had to leave all my family, all my friends, the school I was there, everything, you know. So I wasn't going to go. And then just one day I woke up and I say, I want to go. But like for 6 months, I was saying no. And then one day I woke up and say, I want to go. And it didn't turn out bad.
Can you do the math real quick? Do you know how many kilometers 1,000 miles is?
I don't know, man. I think 1 mile is like 2.3 kilometers.
Okay.
If I'm not...
So roughly 2,300 kilometers.
Yeah, but okay. I think so. I don't know.
All right.
Did you have periods when you were there where you were... Because you were still so young. You didn't regret it at all? You just were like, fuck this?
First 3-4 months, it was really tough. I didn't know nobody... Actually, I almost didn't speak English either. Like, I just know how to say hello, how are you, and that stuff. Nobody spoke my language. I didn't speak Spanish. So it was really tough. And that's how I learned Spanish so quick. And in 3 months, I could speak Spanish like this because I would just listen. But it was really tough, you know. In 3 months, I was like just doing nothing. Just be there, listen, be quiet, and just stay there.
Can you sort of compare the NBA to maybe not just the ACB, but the EuroLeague in general? And the EuroLeague is probably the second best league in the world.
Yeah.
ACB, in terms of a national league, is probably the second best. So just kind of compare the two, the NBA between Europe.
Well, I would say European basketball is more team basketball, more tactics basketball. But it's, you know, it's very different because the court is smaller, the fouls are different, the rules are different, so everything's different, and you have less time. But just playing in the NBA, you know, you have guys that they're almost impossible to guard. And that's why NBA is way more tougher to play. I only say scoring is easier in NBA just because of the amount of the different rules, the less space, the time. So that's why I said it.
You think it's harder to score 30 points in a EuroLeague game than it is in an NBA game?
Yeah, 100%.
But there's better players over here.
Oh, way better players. Yeah. I'm just saying because of the rules.
Yeah.
Because the guy can stay. If you have a guy like, let's say, Rudy Gobert, he can stay in the paint on defense 3 seconds, however he wants. Like, just because of that rule, you can have 10 more points easily.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Looking back on your draft class, it's shocking that you were not the number one pick, given your resume. Did you care where you went in the draft? Was there like a point of pride? Because we've talked to Cade Cunningham was adamant that he would be the number one pick. Like he wanted to be the number one pick. Was it a point of pride for you to be the number one pick? Did that matter at all?
No, not at all. Not at all. And I didn't care where I was going. Like I didn't know any cities. You know, I didn't know it was good city or was bad city. I was just happy to be drafted in the NBA, and that was like everything. But I think I got the best destination I could possibly get. And, you know, just to follow, to have Dirk as a mentor there is just unbelievable.
Did you ever figure out why Sacramento didn't take you?
No. But they said because, you know, they had Fox, so yeah. they needed a big, which I get.
Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah.
I understand that. Your first impressions of Dallas? You'd never been to Dallas?
Never.
You'd pretty much only been to the big cities, LA?
No, I only been to Santa Barbara. And only Santa Barbara and Six Flags in LA. Really?
Seriously?
Seriously. I went twice to Santa Barbara to work at P3.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Okay, yeah. That makes sense.
Great place.
I've been there.
I was going to say, what was your impression of it before you got over here to play? What was your impression of Santa of this, the U.S. in general?
But just, you know, what do you mean impression? Like, how are the cities?
Like, did you want to come? Like, were you looking forward to coming back? Were you just kind of like, oh, this is just like another place? Like, was there?
Oh, yeah. I wanted to come back. You know, I wanted to visit a lot more places. But that time, you know, I could just go to Santa Barbara. I was there for like 2 weeks. And on the weekend, I went to Six Flags in LA. So that was it. That's everything I saw.
So anyways, first impressions of Dallas when you got to Dallas.
Oh, great city, man. I always say Dallas, you have everything, but not too much.
Yeah.
And you have very great restaurants, great people, great everything. And I love Dallas.
Yeah. Was there any surprises or big adjustments you had to make when you moved here in terms of U.S. lifestyle? Or were there any big surprises, adjustments you had to make in terms of lifestyle in the NBA versus lifestyle in Europe?
I mean, lifestyle in the NBA is way different than in Europe, obviously. You know, a lot more people is going to know you. Because in Madrid, you have soccer. So soccer is number one. And then you have a lot of... And then 10th is basketball. I mean, second. But a lot of places. But the only thing I would say is the time-wise. Just because it's 7 hours behind my country... So, you know, people would text me when I would sleep, and then I would text them when they are asleep. So that is still a big adjustment.
Yeah, when I lived in LA, that was like half of the battle for me, was figuring out when to talk to my family because they were all on the East Coast, and that was a 3-hour time change. I know, I'm just saying, 7 hours is very significant.
When I'm in LA, it's 9 hours for my country, so...
We were reading this ESPN article on the way over here. It said that you watched all 10 seasons of Friends. At one point,
I just have it, you know, on when.
Are there other like American cultural things like that that were helpful at all when you were coming over?
I watch a lot of Prince of Bel-Air. I think those two I watch the most, for sure.
The original show, The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Yeah.
Okay.
But there's another one.
There's a new one now.
There's a new one. I didn't see that one. No, but the original.
There's a new one. In terms of the NBA and your rookie year coming over, were you surprised at all by your success, your immediate success that you had? Like, how much of an adjustment on the court was it?
Yeah, I was surprised. Like, I think it's my second year, I would say, when I started, you know, like, playing way better than my rookie year. Like, I was surprised, you know, when I came to the NBA, I never expected to be, you know, this good of a scorer. It's, you know, I was never really a scorer, but, you know, I was really surprised, yeah.
Do you feel like you could pass the ball more? Just being your teammate, I feel like at times I wish you would pass the ball more.
You? I will. If somebody says to me, I will.
I'm only kidding. One of the things I've noticed lately, by the way, is you've always done a good job of this as a pro in terms of hunting matchups. And recently, towards the end of the game, you've hunted Steph. You've hunted LeBron. Played well against them. There was a Jazz game where Rudy got some stops on you. The next time you played them down the stretch, you hunted him. What is it about going against the best players and seeking those matchups out that get you going?
I would say like this, because the best players, they got to work on both ends, you know. You just got to make them work on both ends. Like, they bring me up. Maybe not because I'm a good player, maybe because...
You said you were all defense.
I didn't finish it. They think I can't play defense. No, but it's, you know, they play the whole game, you know, they handle the ball a lot. And, you know, you just want to make him tired, work on both ends of the floor and just go at him. You know, you feel like when you have the best player on you, it's like you want to score yes or yes. So, I mean, it's like a proud moment too.
OM3 fans, I need to tell you about the most comfortable pants out there. They're from Vuori, and they're magnificent. I'm not kidding. Jason told me about them. He called them butter on your legs. Vuori provides a new perspective on performance apparel, perfect if you are sick and tired of traditional old workout gear. Everything is designed to work out in, but doesn't look or feel like it. So comfortable, you will want to wear it all the time, and I do. Honestly, it's comfier than whatever you're wearing right now. Now, the pants I mentioned up top is called the Men's Sunday Performance Jogger. Grab yourself a pair. It'll change your life. Vuori is an investment in your happiness. For our listeners, they are offering 20% off your first purchase. Get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet at Vuori.com/JJ. That's Vuori.com/JJ. Not only will you receive 20% off your first purchase, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75 and free returns. Go to Vuori.com/JJ and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like, every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Watching you early on in your career, I said very similar to James Harden, especially once you developed that step back three. And when he was in Houston, obviously made a living on that. But even in the way you guys get into your ISOs with the double between the legs, so what are you looking at? What are you feeling when you get into your ISO? When you get to that double between the leg cross and you either step through right for the drive or you shoot the step back three, like, what is it that you're reading or that you're feeling from the defense?
You're going to make me tell all my secrets, man. You know what's the first thing I look? Who's under the basket? If it's a big or it's a small. Then I look if he's already been in the paint and he got to get out. Or if he's outside the paint and he can get in. So that's, I think those are the first two things I look. And then just the way, you know, the defense is playing me, which way. Normally they send me right now or left. I don't know. But, you know, I just try to, now I try to more to, you know, drive the ball because, you know, they're going to collapse and somebody's going to be open.
I was gonna ask, you're obviously a super perceptive guy. When you were first coming into the league and even before you got drafted, who were you watching, whether they were teammates or just, you know, your peers, in terms of people that you just admired their games and you were like, I want to sort of take different parts of their games and add them to mine?
Talk about like NBA or Europe?
Either.
Well, I got both.
So both.
So obviously Spanoulis, he was a legend. You know, he retired 1 year ago or 2 years. I always admire him. You know, he was a great leader. One of the clutchest guys ever. He was really clutch, but just his game, you know, he was amazing. And then my teammate Sergio Yu, he was just unbelievable. He was the best player in Europe when I was there, and he just helped me a lot, you know. And watching him practice against him, and just the way he played with his energy, he helped me a lot. And then I couldn't watch a lot of NBA. It was like 3 a.m. where I was, but obviously, you know, LeBron, you know, whatever he's done, you know, his passing skills. Now he's scoring like 50 at what, 37. It's unbelievable. I think those three guys I watched a lot.
We had a very brief conversation when we were teammates about European or overseas superstars versus American superstars. And I thought, I don't remember your exact comment, but I thought it was really interesting. And one of the, just like the takeaways was, the European superstars, a lot of them, and we can talk about Giannis, you, Jokic, for instance, it seems like they're a little more low maintenance than some other ones. And we can point to American superstars like Steph, who are very low maintenance. But culturally, why do you think that is?
I don't know. Are you talking only about basketball players? Because, you know, they're... European superstars like Ronaldo, which is...
I was mostly speaking about basketball players. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, you know, Jokic don't have Instagram or nothing. He's just a different guy. He loves his horses. I tried to convince him to make Instagram, but he said, no chance. And I don't know, man. But I don't know the answer to that question, no. But now... with all these Instagrams, Twitter, TikToks, you can make a lot of money. And with the sponsorships, they want you to post things, you know. It's just different world right now than it was.
Yeah, I'm sure after that $205 million extension you signed, you need those Instagram sponsors.
Yeah, as much as possible, man.
Oh my God. Have you always been a big trash talker, even when you were a kid?
No. I wasn't.
But you are now.
Well, if somebody tells me something, I'm going to say back. But I think this year it's been a lot. But before, I was never.
Do you feel like, I don't remember if this was a label that was given to you when you were coming into the draft, but it's certainly been a label that I've heard a lot in terms of my career, my generation, my era, in terms of the soft European. Did you hear that about yourself?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah.
Even when you got over here? Or just when you were at Real Madrid?
No, I think it was like before the draft. And like, let's say first couple games, you know, I saw on Twitter or something, for sure.
I feel like guys, this is my thing. And I'm not saying you track, you're you're very sarcastic. You have a very dry sense of humor. You talk shit in practice. It's funny. We laugh. We talk shit when we play cards. It's funny. We laugh. But I do feel like at times people test you. And I'm sure early in your career they tested you. And even now they probably test you. And I've never seen you back down from that. Like there's always a response, a rebuttal, whether it's verbally or with a play. Where does that sort of come from? Where does that toughness come from?
I just think I'm competitive in everything. You know, whether it's like I say, playing cards, playing whatever, I just want to win. And you know, if somebody tried to get me going, it gets me going too. Sometimes, you know, in the games you're like sloppy a little bit. Or me, I don't know you, but but sometimes you are, and then somebody, you know, try to test you, it gets me going. It actually helps me. So, but like I say, you know, I'm just competitive in everything. You can ask all my friends. Sometimes we get mad a lot because I'm that competitive.
There's been stories about this with, you know, Kobe and Bron and MJ back in the day, about even like fans getting people going, where it's like you might be there and you might sort of not be into a game, and then all of a sudden you hear somebody talk. Has something like that ever happened, where like in the middle of a game some sort of thing, random thing happens, and you just kind of wake up and you're like, I want to kind of kill now?
Well, yeah, that too, you know, but you know, fans be saying everything, man. Especially some places, man, fans be just saying whatever, you know. But just to get me going, fans, I don't really know if they did. But they've been saying some crazy, crazy stuff, man.
Is this an extension of your inability to lay off the referees? Is it all one and the same, or is the referee sort of in a different bucket? Like the fact that you are constantly berating officials, cussing at them, telling them they suck.
If you saw the last two games, I was really good. You know, I decided.
Actually, you know what? There was a timeout. I was watching the Boston game. Yeah. There was a timeout. You had thought you got fouled. You went over in a very calm manner. You spoke to the referee during the next timeout. I was impressed.
Well, I had a little talk with myself. You know, it was just a real talk. I was like, it was unacceptable no more the way I was acting. You know, maybe it's some of my, you know, personal issues or everything, but I had talk with myself and I just said, this can't keep going. You know, it's a really bad look. I knew I was doing this, but I kept going it. So, you know, it's over, man. It's over now. I had to talk with myself. No more, man.
I was going to ask you about, speaking of Kobe, I was going to ask you about the story of him when he was in the sidelines speaking Slovenian to you. Did you have any other relationship with him? Was that the only time you met him? Or you know, we have a lot of guys who come on the show who idolize him, you know, and they spent months and years sometimes with him, just learning from him. Did you have any other sort of perspective on what he brought to the game or anything like that?
Yeah, actually, I met him before. It was in Portland, you know, just after I was drafted, I think. You know, it was the Nike campus. He was there, and the one advice he gave me was like, you know, watch out, you know, they're going to come after you because, you know, you're from Europe. They're going to try and go after you. And it was true.
One of our good friends who's been on the podcast before, Austin Minhaj, he's a comedian from New York. You've probably seen him on some stuff, but he talked about this idea of Luka at play. And he said, there's no other player, maybe Steph would be the best comparison, but there's no other player who, when they play basketball, they're as free, as carefree, willing to try shit. Like, he compared it to like a young, not saying you're a young child, but he's compared it to like a young child at play exploring a new world. And it seems like every night you're out on the court exploring new opportunities, exploring new experiences. Where does that sense of freedom come from? And how do I capture it in everything I do?
Oh man, I don't know.
Do you feel that though?
I know what he's talking about. Yeah, I feel it. Yeah, but I think it was, you know, the one leg step back when people tried to do it. I think, I don't know who tried it, but I remember like when I was in Real Madrid, I actually did it once without even like wanting to do it. I just wanted to do a step back, but it was like late clock and I did it. So, you know, I don't know. These things just comes up in mind while I play basketball. I don't play nothing before. So it's just like, you know, I'm having fun with basketball and that's all I care.
So when you use the example of the step back against Houston, something you hadn't practiced, now the one-legged shot against Real Madrid. So, but I know you work on your game. So there is some planning involved because you're clearly working on things and you watch film and all that. But I guess the ability to do things on the fly, That's essentially the gift then. The gift is that.
Well, I hope so, yeah. But it also, you know, it's what coach you have, you know, if coach lets you do it. So with both coaches I had, you know, I had the freedom to do that. But maybe I'll get one coach one day, you know, that won't let me do that. So that's going to be a problem then.
Do you have any of your – I was thinking buzzer beaters, but they could be any – any of your crazy shots? And we talk about this with Steph too, where you two are basically the guys who feels like every couple of weeks you will make some shot where everyone else is just like, what the fuck? No, there's no one else on the planet who could do that. Do you have any of those that you've done that you were even surprised by yourself?
I think it was like this year warm up. Nobody got a video of that. It was like I threw it all the way up there and it bounced and it went in. But I was asking for a video for like 1 week and nobody had it. I was like, what? I said it was the greatest shot I ever made. So, but nobody got it.
This is what I'm talking about,
Tommy. That's the worst.
This is what I'm talking about, though. You're at play. Like, you're at play.
Well, the Memphis,
you had the shot.
Memphis
you had the shot. What was the shot? Was that the same shot that you would practice? What's the shot you used to do? Oh, Dwight Powell would throw you a ball and you try to shoulder it in and you finally made it.
No, I made this a couple times now.
Yeah, because I watched you miss that shot a lot.
No,
like
you didn't.
33 times, something like 33 times.
No, I was just practicing.
The Memphis, when you were there at that point, the buzzer beater against Memphis last year.
And the floater?
Yeah, that was pretty
crazy.
That was
the floater
crazy.
From three.
Yeah, that was. I think that was lucky a little bit. But, you know, that's a tough shot, I would say. But I think my favorite buzzer beater was, I think my second year, it was against Portland. It was 0.7 on the clock, and we're down three. And I got the corner shot, and I made it. I think that was the toughest shot.
Where do you go from here? You're 23 years old for the third straight season. Your numbers are insane. You're averaging 28, 9, and 9. You've made two straight first-team All-NBAs. Good chance to make your third straight this year. Like, where do you go? Because we talk with Jason Tatum about this, and he's like, when you do really well as a young player and those expectations are then placed on you, you can continue to be at that level, but then it's like disappointment if you're not making another jump. Like, where does the jump happen? What's the improvement?
Well, obviously, there's one thing, you know, NBA championship. I mean, that's all I wanted, you know, that's all I want. I mean, that's my goal and that's the only goal I have, you know, and I hope one day it happens. That's all. That's next jump.
Do you, like, entertain MVP talks? Does that matter to you?
I mean, obviously, you know, if you, you know, get MVP votes, I mean, the votes, a conversation, obviously it matters, you know, because you're talking about the best league in the world and being MVP, it's awesome. But I would always prefer the NBA championship before MVP.
Oh.
Do you have certain guys around the league that you either like to play against or even just like to watch play?
Oh, yeah, there's a lot. Yeah, a lot. Oof. But I think number one is KD, man. When I watch him play, it just looks way too easy. It's just unbelievable, man.
Does he make this? We talk about this with him a lot, but like, how easy it is for him to score? Does that ever, even for somebody like you, make you a little bit like envious that he can just do whatever he wants all the time?
I think everybody feels like that, man. He's just, I don't know, man. It just looks too easy. Like, if you see him, you know, you can say everybody can do it, but only he can do it, man. It's just unbelievable the way he scores the ball.
Before we let you go, we do have to ask about our friend of the show, Jalen Brunson, and just the player he is, the season he's having, how well he played when you were out, and just the importance of him to your team and sort of helping you guys stay afloat while you were out.
Oh yeah, easily we'll be maybe 500 if he wasn't here, you know. And he's a great guy, great player. This year he's been having a huge leap, how do you say?
Yeah, leap, yeah.
See, my English is improving. And, you know, he's just been balling. Like every game we play, you know, he scores at least 15 or 20 points or 30, you know, and he's just been unbelievable for us. And I think he should be at least top three and most improved for sure.
Yeah. Luca, we appreciate the time. I believe this is the first podcast that you've done.
Yes.
I told you it was going to be harmless. It was fine, right?
So.
It was fine.
Nah, it was fine.
All right. We appreciate it, brother.
Thank you.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, 15% off your first order with code WONDERY. So head to BOLLandBranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code WONDERY for 20% off your first purchase.
All right, let's welcome in new OM3 correspondent Alex Caruso. As always, Alex, pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you for joining us on the road. We appreciate it.
Hey, man, it's always a pleasure. Glad to be here.
We should mention, by the way, that this segment of The Old Man of Three is brought to you by the new HBO original series, Winning Time, The Rise of the Lakers Dynasty. You can stream it now on HBO Max. And listen to the official Winning Time podcast wherever you get your podcasts. I really believe this. Like, as much as the 90s Bulls had an impact on NBA culture, the 80s Lakers had as big or bigger. Like, Magic's run and the Lakers' run there in the 80s, it is why we have the modern NBA. It is why we have it. And none of us really got to live through it. We've all just heard these stories, you know, through the grapevine, or we've watched games on YouTube. So that's why I think I'm so excited for this series, is just to see this sort of story play out over this season.
Yeah, when you think about it, like, there's never been any inside information. Like, nowadays we have social media, right? You can see inside, outside, everything in between of what's going on, you know, people's lives outside of basketball, seeing how it actually affects them on the court, seeing how their relationships are affected. That's probably the neatest thing for me, is just to kind of see. Obviously, you know, it's a little bit of a depiction of it, but I mean, it'll be fun to just see, you know, how they go about their lives living in LA, because I know very well how hard that can be, how distracting that can be.
Yeah, I was going to ask you just about when you were there, just about that pressure, you know, about being a Laker, because there's, you know, the Lakers and maybe you could say the Yankees, but like, there's not really anyone else. There's nothing else in sports like it. And so, like, you know, you obviously had a great run there, but is that something that you embraced immediately, or was that something that took a little bit of time to get used to?
You know, the crazy thing for me was, like, there was no expectations at first, right? Because I'm a two-way guy. I'm getting brought up and we're just really bad, right? Like, the first year I was there, it was pre-LeBron. It was still all the young guys, didn't make the playoffs. People got shut down late in the year. So I'm getting up there and, like, it's like, hey, whatever you can give us, we're going to accept. And, you know, we talked about my game is play hard, play to win. And those were things at the time that, you know, Lakers fans had been missing for a couple of years. But then, you know, fast forward a couple of years, now we got Bron, AD, you know, Dwight, Rondo, Danny Green, like all these guys that are championship guys. And now the expectations are a little higher, but, you know, there's something about that team and those 2 years that I was there where it was like, we will put more pressure on ourselves than anybody else could, you know? So when we go out there, like, the expectation and the bar that we set for ourselves is like, when we fall short of it, Lakers fans are going to be upset with us, but we're going to be more upset with ourselves, which, you know, takes a little bit of the pressure off.
And look, a lot of that pressure is established in the modern NBA because of that dynasty in the 1980s. And certainly the Lakers had won championships before in Minneapolis. And obviously I think they won one with Jerry West, or maybe two with Jerry West, Elgin Baylor, whoever. But, you know, that 80s team really established the Lakers as this like cultural icon, this basketball icon. And part of the reason is because of the larger than life figures that are depicted in the show: Magic, Kareem, Jerry West, Pat Riley. Tommy, what are your sort of early impressions or takeaways from the first couple episodes?
Well, the show is real. I mean, that's what's interesting about it. And I know that it's not that there's been some back and forth about, you know, what the league thinks about and everything like that. But the there's a depiction of whether it's Magic or you know, Jerry West or Jerry Buss or Jeannie Buss or whoever the characters that are sort of like portrayed in the show, they're showing what they were really like. And it's really interesting, I think, for NBA fans to get a chance to see a show like this, because we, like, you know, three of us are obviously, you know, huge consumers of NBA content. There hasn't been a show on a premium network that captures what these, you know, people were really like, that has really depicted the NBA like this that I can remember. And I also say, I'm blanking on his name, but the actor is his first time actor who plays Magic on the show is unbelievable. He looks exactly like him. The basketball looks really good, which is cool, because as you guys know, we've talked about the show, basketball is not always good on shows like this. And so it makes a huge difference to have him sort of be the figurehead of this, because, you know, just capturing the spark and the charisma that somebody like Magic Johnson has is not an easy thing to do. And I think just from a casting standpoint, we talked about it a little bit with Adam McKay when he came on the show. From a casting standpoint, that makes the show, because having a guy like that as Magic makes it feel realistic.
Again, Winning Time, The Rise of the Lakers Dynasty. You can stream it now on HBO Max. Shout out to our guy, friend of the show, Adam McKay. Great show. Go watch it. All right. First time we've had you on since the injury. You and I
spoke. Since my promotion.
Yeah, so spoke a few times right after your injury. But you've been back for three games. I do want to go back to the injury itself. You know, I think you have spoken with Grayson, if I'm not correct. That feeling of being suspended in the air, and I never jumped as high as you, but how would you describe to just a casual basketball player that doesn't have your vertical leap, what that feeling is like of getting knocked out of the air after jumping off one leg going for a dunk?
Yeah. Well, so just statement of fact to make sure that we're accurate with our history here. I never actually had a conversation with him, or a text or phone call. So that's still kind of up in the air. Past is a past is what it is. Don't really expect one, but, as far as the play, man, just, you know, routine fast break. I think Io throws it to me and I'm going to load up to dunk. And then, you know, there's always the sense of like going up and like you get fouled in the air, you fall. It's normal in basketball. But then there was like the, once you get to a certain like planal degree, you know, like there's like a small sense of panic, because it's just like you're out of control. Like there's no control on what happens now. And I try to do my best, because I fall a lot, always falling a lot, of, you know, not putting my hand down and bracing my hand, because I actually fractured my left wrist in high school, kind of doing the same thing. I think it was off a charge, though. Some kid just like ran me over and I put my hands down and I had kind of the same like hairline fracture in my wrist. But yeah, man, just a slight sense of panic, you know, because you don't know when it's going to end. You don't really know where you are. And then eventually, you know, you have the nice little thud on the ground, which, you know, you never win those battles.
Did you know that it was broken that night?
No, I didn't. I actually talked about it in the press conference after the game, where I thought I just sprained it. You know, I've, like I said, I've fallen a lot. I've hit my wrist a lot. I finished the game. I taped it up, finished the game. I was obviously really stiff and sore during the game, but, you know, there's so much adrenaline going on. It was my second game back after missing like 3 or 4 weeks with a foot injury and then COVID. So like I was trying to play basketball on, you know, regardless of any setback. And it's against the Bucks, right? Big game, big Eastern Conference matchup. We were already kind of shorthanded, so I was trying to play. But no, I felt pretty good, you know, relatively speaking. next morning, though, I woke up, you know, we flew to Orlando that night, woke up the next morning, couldn't pick up the toothbrush to brush my teeth. Couldn't like put body wash on my like left side of my body. I was like, all right, there's probably something wrong with my wrist.
We talked about this with you a little bit, but I mean, you've had a great season on the court. The team's obviously had a great year, but you've also been a little snake bit. I mean, the COVID thing was rough for you comparatively even to the rest of your team, and you've had a little of these things. So like mentally, when you got the news, what's your like bounce back mechanism? How do you not keep yourself from kind of, you know, getting too down?
Yeah, no, I for sure was. I mean, when like I can still remember the phone call after the doc called me, our team doc calls me Doc Cole, and you know, it's never good when the first thing they say isn't everything's fine, you know, like you can usually tell by like the tone and the mood of the conversation that something's wrong. But yeah, first couple of days, man, I was pretty bummed out. I was also just really nervous about surgery because I've never had surgery before. You know, never been gone under the knife. So like that for me was a whole new experience. And then really just, you know, not being able to use my wrist, you just kind of feel helpless for a couple of days. But I try to do my best, man. You know, it's been the same thing for me my whole career in basketball. You know, there's always been some type of adversity, whether, you know, undrafted, you know, playing the G League the whole year, don't get a single call up, have to go to summer league to prove it, two-way prove it. It's like, so for me, the motivation's always been intrinsic. So I think for me, it was just about, all right, like how am I going to kick rehab's ass? How am I going to come in every day, you know, bust my ass to be ready to come back so that I can be back out there on the court for my team.
What was the initial prognosis in terms of the timeline?
6 day weeks. Six day weeks was the first. So there's two different ways you can go about it, right? Normally if time's not an issue. So if I did this like in the summer, I would have had surgery, gone hard cast for 6 weeks, and then at the end of the 6 weeks, take another scan and then probably go to splint and start moving it. But obviously, you know, basketball season's not long enough for me to wait 6 whole weeks and then go, you know, scan it again and then start rehab and moving it. So 6 to 8 weeks, once 6 weeks in the bone healed, I was going to be cleared to play, which is, you know, exactly what happened. I was thinking I was hard cast for like 3 days and then went straight to a splint, which, you know, I couldn't use it for the first 3 weeks, you know, just doing anything on like daily activities. I couldn't use it without it being painful. And then eventually, you know, we're athletes. We tend to push the boundaries a little bit. You know, you start pulling your socks on a little more aggressive, start tying your shoes, you know, open the car door, stuff like that. And then the six weeks happened, when took the CT scan, it was healed, got cleared for full contact, and then played my first game about a week ago, a little under a week ago.
So right on the timeline. As you and I talked, and one of the reasons we talked was because I told you I'd broken my hand or wrist 7 times in my life, and 6 of those times was playing basketball. One time was acting like I was playing basketball. I was 8 years old and I jumped off a ledge onto a tree branch like I was dunking. And I flipped around and, you know, landed on my wrist. Fun stuff. But I remember my last break in LA, my first year in LA, similar timeline, 6 to 8 weeks. I was in a soft splint for a hard cast for 3 weeks, and I went into a soft splint. Those 3 weeks before I played, the rehab required when you're in season to get that wrist mobile again, to get your strength back, was probably one of the most excruciating things that I've had to go through as an athlete.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still, you know, like I'm cleared to play and I'm playing, but I'm not 100%. You know, you couldn't expect to be after 6 weeks. You know, there's rehab that goes with it. There's, like you said, getting the strength back. You know, I didn't shoot a basketball. I didn't dribble a basketball for 5.5 weeks, and then you come back in and expect to be, you know, shooting 30 footers. It's not realistic. I think like the progress I made was like the first day I was allowed to touch a basketball, I shot 50 form shots and I was like, this, it's way too like painful. I can't do any more. And then like a week later I could shoot, you know, corner threes. And then like 4 days after that, I was like, all right, now top of the wing shots. Like the process of it's really, like you said, it's just meticulous. There's a lot more that goes into it than people think of, you know, you just sit for 6 weeks and now you're back to normal. Right. It's there's a whole process of getting the mobility back, getting the strength back, and then, you know, being able to bear contact, bear weight on it.
There was a play the other night, Sacramento, that went viral. You were in the left corner. I don't know if it was a turnover or a long rebound, but a clear fast break for Sacramento. You were probably, you know, sixth or seventh in line of the 10 players on the court to have a run at the rim. You sprinted it back. You got the strip, knocked it off the guy's leg. I think Kobe picked it up underneath the basket. And you guys headed the other way. And my thought on that play was, like, that play perfectly encapsulates why Alex Caruso obviously is so valuable, but also why you are so endearing to every fan base that you play for. It's full tilt, maximum hustle. On a play like that, like, what is going through your mind?
Yeah, well, so the game also dictates that a lot too, like time and score, right? But you know, we hadn't been playing great, and we, I think we were down 20 at halftime, and it was one of those games where we just, like, you know, no, like, it's no offense to Sacramento, we didn't play up to our capabilities, kind of played down to the competition we were playing against, right? Looking at records, looking at stuff like that. So second half came out and was just like, all right, any play that's going to be made, like, I'm not going to make it. I didn't try hard enough to win the game type thing, right? So run back. As I'm going down, like, all those plays, you know, any type of chase down play, like, I'm not going to go up and try and meet him up top. That's how you get dunked on. That's how you get hurt, right? You jump late. That's just not a good spot to be in. So I always just try and get a run through, and I got good hands. I got good instincts. I got good timing. Just try to get a touch on the ball. And if they put it out there, usually I get one, and just tried to hustle back and make the play, like you said. But yeah, it's really just about trying to find the opening. The defenders got to, or sorry, the offensive guys got to give me the chance to go get it. I think there was a similar play in the first half with Metu again, where I think it was actually off of one of my turnovers that he went down, and I tried to do the same play, but the ball wasn't there. So I just made, you know, I just ran through, took it out, go to the next play. But this time it was open, you know, trying to be instinctual, trying to make plays to win. That's, like you said, that's who I am.
I think since the last time you've been on, DeMar, I mean, he's had a crazy year all year, but he had that stretch with a couple of buzzer beaters in a row, and he just went on that run. You were out at that point. Were you sick? Was that COVID, or was that the wrist at that point? I'm pretty sure you weren't playing.
The buzzer beaters was COVID. I'm going to hit the back-to-back when
yeah.
we played Indiana. But and
what is this, like, what's going through your mind as his teammate when this is happening? Because I remember JJ and I were talking about what's happening.
It's just a video game. Like, at this point, it's like, it's not real life, right? Like, dude's not known for three-point shooting, first of all, and then hits two back-to-back game-winning three-pointers, one of them off one leg. Like those are shots you take, like, when you're messing around in your summer workouts, or, like, you know, messing around, like playing ones at the end of a pickup or something like that. He's just doing that. And then, yeah, the streak he had right before All-Star break, which was when I was out with my wrist, where he had, like, what was it, like 8 games in a row, 35 plus.
Shooting 50% or more. Yeah,
I think my career high in the NBA is 32. So I've done that once. And he did that in like a week straight, 2 weeks straight. Dude's just, he's a special talent, man.
The one-legged three was so special to me because, like, we've seen guys make one-legged threes before, but he didn't have to shoot a one-legged three. Like, he wasn't forced to shoot a one-legged three. He kind of did this awkward gather and just went off one leg for no reason. It was, like, to your point, it's like it's a shot you shoot in warm-ups or in the summer when you're just goofing around.
Which I have a theory. I think that's why he made it. I think he made it because it was like not no thinking. It was just strictly rhythm, you know, like he was like clock's going down and he's like, oh shoot, I got 3 seconds. And he's like, I haven't made a move yet. And so he's like, all right, whatever I got to do, like, I'm going to do it. And whatever he felt comfortable with is what he went with. And that was a hell of a shot, man. It was nuts.
Yeah. Special season for him. And next time we have you on before the start of the playoffs, when the seeding is a little more, you know, cut and dry.
Yeah.
I would love to. We'll chat more about just how crazy these East playoffs is going to be. But I do want to get to the draft. Before we get to the draft, I want to mention that you had you just had a great subtweet of Grayson Allen in regards to on a chase down play, being aware of when a guy jumps off one leg. The possibility of an injury. No, it's I'm true, but like
no, that was subtle. I didn't intentionally do that, but that was nice.
Yeah. No, but so I'm not going to subtweet Grayson. It was a fucking terrible play. It was a dangerous play. It was fucking brutal. I hated that play. Let's do the draft. Tommy, in honor of the NCAA tournament starting this week, what is this week's draft topic?
So we are doing March Madness moments we wish we were in the arena for.
Perfect. I mean, I obviously know what the number one pick should be, so it's going to get taken off the board. I'm going to be really disappointed.
Alex, line it up. Line it up, baby. You're first.
So we're going to go with the single greatest comeback in NCAA basketball history, also NCAA tournament history, Texas A&M versus Northern Iowa, second round, down 12 with 44 seconds, double overtime win. I believe a young senior guard, Alex Russo, had a great game. I think the stat line of him just – thinking randomly here was like 25 points, 9 boards, 3 assists, something like that. Go down 99.9, whatever the index was. Great comeback. Great story.
I was looking this up today. That press, at what point did you guys know that you were just fucking them up with it? Because it's really insane to watch that. It's really insane to watch it back.
Yeah, no, I mean, once we got it to 6, I was like, okay, we really got a chance here. And then House hit that 3 on the wing to cut it to 3. And I was like, well, we're probably going to do this now. People don't understand that. Like, we went to double overtime. Like we didn't – like, that was regulation. And then we had another overtime where we had, like, a back and forth. And then double overtime, we wore them out eventually. I think they're emotionally, you know, we're a little defeated.
Yeah. So a couple comments on that pick. Number one, this is now back-to-back – drafts that our Old Men of the Three correspondent has essentially chosen themselves. number two, I don't think at any point in time, Tommy and I would have picked that in the first round, the second round, the third round, probably not even the fourth round. So it's reaching a little bit as the number one pick. And number three, the draft topic was, in my understanding, instantly moments that you wish you were in the arena for, you were in the fucking arena.
I know.
So I'm not saying you're disqualified.
I disagree with JJ completely. First of all, it's rich coming from him as he's picked himself like 50 times in different drafts.
Yeah, I picked myself for the greatest number fours of all time. I did. Yeah. And in that's the fifth funny. Round, which was great value.
That's funny coming from him. Secondly, to Alex's credit, and I saw this today when I was looking it up, this is literally like if you Google best comebacks in NCAA history, it is in the top.
I watched the final game. It was awesome. Service.
It's the best comeback in college basketball history.
Yeah, fair enough.
I think it's fair a great enough. Number one pick. Great.
Okay.
JJ's a hater.
All right, go ahead.
Specific. That's a little.
All right. I'm picking, this is a very obvious one, but I'm picking the Chris Jenkins buzzer beater in 2016, and we've talked about it with Josh and Jalen when they came on, not just because of his shot, but I feel terrible for Marcus Page, who hit the shot before, because that would have been like one of the craziest game time shots ever if that hadn't happened. And so just that back and forth between those two things made it kind of like put it over the top.
Game time for the Natty, you can't beat that. That's
crazy. Tough. It's kind of crazy how open he was though too.
Tommy, I love the pick. I love the pick. I do feel like I just two amazing things just landed in my lap.
Okay.
And I want to thank you both for that, because after round one, I clearly am going to have the advantage here. So obviously Leitner's shot to beat Kentucky.
That's an easy number one pick.
It's arguably the greatest college basketball, maybe the greatest basketball game ever played. Just two high-level squads going back and forth.
Definitely arguable.
Sean Woods hits the bank shot floater. You know, 2.1 seconds. Leitner, just a fucking magical shot. Amazing pass by Grant Hill. Incredible execution by Coach K. You love to see it.
All around, yep.
You love to see it. It's also a seminal moment in my life. I've talked about it a bunch. It was the moment I turned around and looked at my parents and said, I'm going to go play for Duke someday. Number two, the 1979 national championship game, Magic versus Bird. This is when the Magic versus Bird rivalry started. And according to my research, and I don't know if this is true or not, but in the article I read, it is still the highest rated basketball game of all time. Olympics, yeah. NBA, college, whatever. Highest rated basketball game of all time. So Lakers shot, Magic versus Bird.
Well, shout out to Winning Time. I think that's that's a fine number one pick. I think that is a stretch as a number two pick, just the two of them playing together. I mean, there's so many moments, but you know what?
Could you imagine being there in the arena at the beginning of that rivalry? Yeah.
I don't know.
That was
going
to be my next one. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, my gosh.
All right.
That was like Larry's like
Tommy, the anti-historian.
Okay. I'll take it. All right. I'm going another comeback for my second pick. I'm going Illinois 2005 Elite Eight against Arizona. So they were down 15 with 4 minutes left. That was Channing, Salim Stoudemire, Arizona team. The crazier thing, though, is they were down 8 with a minute left. And I was watching it again. I was watching it back today. Arizona didn't really choke. Like, they didn't really miss free throws. They were still hitting shots toward the end. The Atlanta just hit everything. And shout out to Darren Williams and Luther Head, brought them back. That was a pretty, even though they didn't win the championship, it was a pretty magical team that year. Yeah,
it's a good pick. Tommy,
your JJ is so.
No, it's a good pick. He's got two really solid picks. I don't know that that's a second round pick. That's a really good solid pick.
All right, we're going 1983 NC State over 5 Slamma Jamma. I can't remember the guy that hit the game winning shot's name, but
Lorenzo Charles,
54-52 NC State, forever in the history books. Probably one of the biggest upsets in the national championship history.
Yeah. Jim Valvano running around the court looking for someone to hug. It's a great pick.
Yeah. That's the story you've seen everywhere. So this one is it's a little bit more than just a moment, like one single moment, but Cardiac Kemba 2011. You know, they run through the Big East and then 11 game win streak. Cardiac Kemba, national champion, 23-6-6 in the Final Four, most valuable player.
You need a game though. You need one game.
Championship game.
Championship game. Okay. That works.
Okay.
I like that. That's
a homer one because that was when I was just like, I was like a senior, junior high school. And for me, going to college to play basketball was like the coolest thing ever. And watching him tear through everybody was free entertainment for me.
Again, you know, I have a comment after nearly every pick. And like my only issue with that pick,
such a hater.
My only issue with that pick is great run from Kemba. And there were some magical moments in that Big East tournament. But I remember watching that title game and thinking, God damn it, this is the most boring basketball game I've ever watched in my life.
I remember it was
53-41. Butler had 41 points in that game.
Oof.
It's the epitome of what I hate about college basketball. But yeah, great moment.
That's partially because that's how Butler played too.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
It was just kind of gross.
All right. I'm going for NBA history, or college basketball history. I'm going 1982, UNC Georgetown, MJ game winner, 15 seconds left. See, the difference between the Bird and Magic and this is, in this point, MJ hit the game winner. So not only are you getting to see Michael Jordan, you're seeing him hit the game winning shot. So yeah. I like that better than JJ's pick, but that's just my opinion.
No, it's really good. Thank you. It's a really good pick. Really good.
To get back in it.
No, I'm already in it. I know that. I'm gonna go with Bryce Drew's shot to beat Ole Miss in 1998. Valparaiso's the 13 seed, Ole Miss is the 4 seed. They streak Bryce Drew up the sideline. They threw a full court pass, almost like a what is the route called? Hook and ladder. There you go, in football. Bryce Drew hits the game winner. Now every single, like every team you've been on since then, is that like an end of game play that you practice that you go over?
We had it in LA.
Yeah.
Called it home run.
Yeah, home run. Exactly. So Bryce Drew shot And then I'm going to, like, a little curveball here, because I remember watching this game and just thinking how amazing the moment was. I'm going to go with Morgan Williams' buzzer beater in 2017. Mississippi State beats UConn and ends their 111-game winning streak. Now, Mississippi State went on to lose in the championship game to South Carolina. Shout out Don Staley. But that was one of the coolest moments I've seen in the NCAA tournament. To make a buzzer beater to beat...
to end that run.
An unbeatable crazy. UConn team
yeah.
was amazing.
You really did think you were unbeatable for a long time there.
Yeah.
Like UConn was just like, all right, they're going to win.
How many games was it? 111?
111, yeah.
Jesus, this is like 3 years.
Insane.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going for... I'm going similar buzzer beater. I'm going Arike Angu... Ogunbowale is getting the pronunciation right before this. Notre Dame, back-to-back buzzer beaters. First, she hit the one against UConn in the Final Four, and then she hit it against Mississippi State to win it in 2018, which was wild because it was like you knew she was taking the shot, and she still did it.
I like it. I mean, dude, yeah. Yeah.
Good draft so far, right?
I know.
JJ's got nothing to say.
There's a buzzer beater. Somebody might pick it. I'm not going to talk about it. There's a buzzer beater I think that's better than that, Tommy. But whatever. All
right. Okay.
Go ahead, Alex.
All right. Ali Farouk Manesh.
Oh, yeah.
The dagger three against Kansas. 34 seconds left on the game clock. 30 seconds on the shot clock, up one, and he pulls it just with no conscience, no frame of mind. Probably one of the bigger upsets, definitely of that year, but for many years to come. That Kansas team was just, I mean, the Kansas team was elite, and I'm pretty sure a couple of those Kansas players are on my second pick, which is Mario Chalmers, top of the key game winner in the Natty. It's like 3 seconds left, something like that.
It's a good one. It's a really good one.
Yep. Last one.
Close solid out. Draft all around, I got to say. Other than Alex's first and third pick, I think everybody's pick.
Other than the greatest comeback in NCAA history, yeah, other than that one.
You got your fifth one now.
He took two.
Oh, you took two? Okay.
He took two Kansas ones.
All right. I'm closing. I'm going got a few options here. I'm going last year UCLA Gonzaga, Jalen Suggs. That game was sick. The only thing that was, I mean, not for obvious reasons, the only thing that was a bummer about that game is there are no fans. And so it's weird.
Yeah.
It was a little weird to have that in an empty arena. But like that back and forth was crazy.
I feel like everybody kind of adopted UCLA at one point too, right? Like they came from the first four, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, they were the 11. They were the
11 seed playing, and they were just like on a roll. And so basically anybody who wasn't, you know, like a USC fan, Arizona fan, or like a, you know, a homer of some other blue blood team, they kind of just accepted. Like they were like on the super run. We're like, all right, cool. We're going with it.
Yeah.
All right. Fifth pick. I mean, my issue is there's just so many great Duke moments, you know. That's really my issue. That's really my issue. I really want to pick Tyus Edney's length to length, or you know, floor length buzzer beater to beat Missouri in the second round, because UCLA went on to win the championship in 95. I think that's an iconic moment. But I'm going to go actually in the 1991 national semifinal game when Duke beat UNLV. And the backstory on that, of course, is that UNLV the previous year beat Duke by 30. It was the largest rout ever in an NCAA title game. Duke was completely outmatched. They're going against a UNLV team that hadn't lost. They're the underdogs. Duke, of course, had made the Final Four 86, 88, 89, 90,
okay. 91. Yep, we get it.
And they hadn't got over the hump. So this was one of the most important moments in Duke basketball history in Coach K's coaching career. They beat UNLV 79-77. Leitner hit a couple free throws to end it. Bobby Hurley hit a big clutch three. Stones. Just a huge moment in Duke history. I mean,
what about 2014?
2014.
Duke Mercer. Do you remember that, Alex?
I do, actually. 15 versus 2.
14-3, yeah, that was a good game.
You want to bring up CJ McCollum, Lehigh, 15-2? Yeah. Like, we can talk.
It was on my list.
I mean, that was there. Eric Maynor.
1991.
I feel like there's a lot of great Duke tournament.
2010.
Duke tournament losses.
What did you say? Oh, sorry. I was just listing the five national championships that Coach K has.
If we would have waited one more week, we could have done... You know, Coach K's final game, that could have been his sixth round pick for like favorite moment.
We should mention, by the
Alex
way,
Alex is coming
if,
back
if
next
you
week.
Listen to the pod, Tommy's going to post it. Alex, Mikel, Subert, Tyrese, we all, Tommy, everybody, we all put up our brackets. They are public. You can go check those out. Tommy will put them on social. Alex, we appreciate the time, man. As always, best of luck to you guys as you finish up the season. We'll check in with you soon, brother.
Appreciate it, guys.
If you like The Old Man of the Three, you can listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. Auto Trader.
Yo, Trey.
Kevin, what's up, man?
You know, I've been thinking, what would have happened if the NBA never vetoes the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers and we get CP3 in the same backcourt as Kobe in LA?
Well, you get a very happy Jack Nicholson, for sure.
And the Lakers probably win a bunch more championships. CP3 finally gets a ring or two or three, and the Kardashian empire is forever altered.
What did you just say? Hey, everybody, I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier, and we're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former sports center anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass
or play call. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.